Listener's discretion is strongly advised while listening to this podcast. We talk about some dark and disturbing subjects, but if you're into that kind of thing, then carry on listening. If you could help myself out and the podcast by smashing 5 stars and leaving a review, that will be absolutely perfect. Thank you. Enjoy. Welcome to Under the Stairs.
Hey, hello.
A podcast that is brimming with gruesome true crime events.
Oh my god.
Paranormal encounters and more weird, wonderful and bizarre things that the world will bring. And good day and welcome to Under the Stairs. Today is, well, quite a very disturbing, and I want to put it in there that we've got some incest things going on in this episode today. Now, I put a poll up on my Instagram and there was a big split. I asked you guys if you wanted to learn about the cult family incest case, or do you want some paranormal stories? And there was a big split down the line. It was a 40-40% for the cult and paranormal. And of course, well, the other 20%, that was some disturbing murder case. But anyway, we're not talking about the murder case today. We are going to firstly get involved in the incest case. The cult family. What a beautiful family to talk about, right? Yeah. But as always on this podcast, we go through 5 weird ways of... Well, currently, we've been going through 5 weird and bizarre ways how people have died. But today, we're changing things up, people. Let's go. Today, I'm going to give you 5 of the most haunted locations in the world. Number 1. Dragsholm Slot, or Dragsholm Castle in Denmark, was originally built in 1215. Making it one of the oldest castles in Denmark, and reportedly the most haunted castle in all of Europe. In the 16th and 17th century, parts of it were used to house prisoners, and in 1694 it was rebuilt in a Baroque style. The castle is thought to be home to at least 100 ghosts, including the Earl of Bothwell, the husband of Mary, Queen of Scots, who died as a prisoner in the castle. You may have also seen the White Lady wandering the halls, whose skeleton was found encased in the walls by a builder in 1930. The current situation with the castle is that it's being transformed into a luxurious hotel with lavish rooms and Michelin star rated restaurant serving all local source food. Now, the hotel offers their own guided tour to explain the history of the building, but for a truly terrifying experience, you can book a ghost tour, and it's included in a 2-night stay. Number 2. The Ancient Ram Inn in Gloucestershire, England, built in 1145. The inn was used by priests who kept their slaves and workers in there to help build St. Mary's Church. Located in Wootton-under-Edge, it is situated on 2 ley lines. Places believed to have spiritual energy from Stonehenge. It has also been reported that it was the scene of a child sacrifice and devil worshipping. It is widely believed that the redirecting of water on the ancient Ram property caused a portal of dark energy to open, meaning many ghosts haunt the inn. The witch's room is said to be haunted by a woman burnt at the stake in the 1500s, as she was accused of being a witch. A high priestess is also spotted sitting on the bed. A centurion on horseback has been walking through the walls, and agonizing screams of a girl is heard, and a monk in the most haunted room, and even a scubus is said to have slipped in to the beds of visitors. Now, despite being well known for one of the most haunted places in the world and featuring on many ghost hunted programs such as Ghost Adventures, the inn has changed hands several times in recent past, making owners difficult to track down, but many paranormal events are hosted at the inn. Number 3. The separate prison, Port Arthur in Australia. Until the late 1800s, the separate prison in Tasmanian's secluded Port Arthur housed some of Britain's toughest criminals. This prison block thrived on completely isolating prisoners to a torturous degree. The separate prison operated a silent system where the prisoners were hooded, placed in solitary confinement, and forbidden to speak to anyone. Conditions were so unbearable that countless inmates would murder their fellow prisoners. They'd rather face the death penalty than spend another minute there. Now, when it comes to ghosts, there's hundreds of hooded inmates are said to wander the halls at night. A handful of 1,000 people buried in unmarked graves around the prison. This place is now an historic site and is open to the public as a museum, but there are still many very chilling nights of ghost tours available. From the pictures, you might want to look this up yourselves. And would you want to be there with hundreds of hooded inmates surrounding you that you couldn't see? Number 4. Myrtle's Plantation, USA. Situated in the small town of St. Francisville, northwest of New Orleans, is a mansion on Myrtle's Plantation. The stained glass front door leads into a grand foyer displaying a huge French crystal chandelier. Now, with 10 people being murdered in the mansion, it's no surprise there's been so many reported ghost sightings, the most famous of which is Chloe. She had her ear cut off by her lover. She wears a green turban, peering intently at visitors while they're in bed, and also appearing in a photograph. A more recent photo also shows another young girl, known as, well, you kind of knew it, Ghost Girl. She appears through the window of the house, and more eerie sightings include a child bouncing on the bed, soldier, and a voodoo priestess, and the ghost of a previous owner who was shot in the chest has been heard staggering up the stairs where he died. Despite being known as one of the most haunted houses in America, the plantation is now pretty much a bed and breakfast, offering 12 accommodations. Ghost tours are also on offer, and you can choose between daily tours, or the spookier and more popular events, yes, at night. I'd certainly be choosing the night one. And finally, number 5, the Hellfire Club in Montpelier Hill, Dublin. This place was a hunting lodge and it was built in 1925 for William Connolly, an Irish parliamentary speaker. The stones of the buildings are from ancient passage tombs. This is said to have angered the devil, which first associated the site with the supernatural. The lodge reportedly became a gathering place for a small group of Dublin's elites who met and began to devil worship. Its ruins sit at the summit of Montpelier Hill in Dublin. Tales of animal sacrifice, black masses, cloven hoofed men, and murder are linked at the structure. The most popular tale tells of a visit by a satanic creature in the form of a man. It was also only discovered when one of the players dropped a card and picked it up, noticed the guest had cloven feet. On his discovery, the creature disappeared in a ball of flames. There are stories about a big black cat, the size of a dog, who took upon a priest and haunts a lodge. The most regular ghostly visitor is a young lady, believed to have been placed in a barrel, set on fire, and rolled down a hill for fun. Now, the Hellfire Club is a popular stopping point for a walking trail through the Dublin hills. Of course, ghost tours are always there, but it's mainly busy on Halloween night. The paranormal is something which I absolutely love. Yes, I am a massive fan of it, and sometimes, you know what, it's good to be skeptical and ask certain questions about things you hear. But you know what, I love this little section. I do also like talking about weird and bizarre ways that people may have died, but you know what, I'm gonna add this little section in a bit more about the paranormal. But now, my friends, it's time we dropped into today's story. And it's about the cult family incest case in Australia. Now, a trigger warning has been put out and will be put out again. So please be aware, this story is incredibly messed up and very, very emotional. Now, let's get into this one. Me and you. Let's get into the cult family incest case. We begin in New Zealand. A lady named June was born in 1948, and Tim Colt was born in 1943. They were originally from New Zealand. June, who was the product of a brother-sister incest, married Tim in 1966. The couple had several children together: Martha, Frank, Paula, Cherry, Rhonda, Betty, and Charlie. Before moving to Victoria in Australia in 1970. Now, Tim Colt began to rape Betty when she was 12. Betty wanted to know if June could donate a kidney to her grandmother. This is when she found out that her mother, June, was inbred. The family grew to nearly 40 members, ranging from grandparents to mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, aunts, uncles, nephews, brothers and sisters, all engaging in various forms of incest. Many of the children suffered from deformities and medical problems. School attendance was sometimes non-existent and happened only when welfare officers visited the family. Some children tormented animals, mutilating their genitals as a pastime. Children and adults regularly engaged in sexual activities which conceived children, some with genetic deformities. Most of the children had fungal infections. In order to hide pregnancies, the girls would sometimes miscarry on the farm. There were incidents of girls being tied to trees and raped by the boys. They had no access to running water, showers, toilets, or hygiene products. The case had been described by Detective Chief Inspector Peter Yeomans as like nothing I've seen ever, and was considered by many to be so shocking that in a rare move, the New South Wales Children's Court allowed full details to be made public, with all names changed to protect the children, including the family name of Colt. And the knowledge of the family came to authorities in June 2010, which led to 7 risk of significant harm reports. However, an official investigation was not opened until July 2012, when a child reported overhearing another child in a local primary school speaking of an unkept girl living in the bush. It was pregnant with a child fathered by a brother. The child overheard the girl state that one of her sisters was pregnant, and they did not know which one of her brothers was the father. Over the next year or so, police tracked the family down, and after obtaining an understanding of the living conditions, they put several children in foster care, including Bobby, who was Betty's son with her younger brother, and Billy, Betty's son with her oldest son. Yes, get that one right. Billy was Betty's son with her older son as the father. Police discovered the living area of 38 members of the family living in completely downright horrendous conditions in tents and shacks on the outskirts of Buroa. Now, the family were charged with incest and child neglect, but Betty Colt legally disputed the charges and attempted to regain custody. How, I do not know where her brain currently is. After tracking cell phone activity of Betty, police discovered text messages of a sexual nature sent to her son Bobby. She and Bobby had made plans to abduct Billy from foster care. Genetic testing showed that Bobby was the product of incest between Betty and the father or full brother. This is just completely messed up and fucked up right now, okay? I just can't seem to get my head around it. I mean, yes, this has happened, but I am still struggling to get my head around the old incest kind of shit that people do. It happens in the world, and that's probably why you're listening to this podcast. So, let's continue, shall we? Now, the case has been described as unique because of the reluctance of victims to come forward. It has been said that there are many difficulties in determining the guilt of particularly the offenders. How in the world can you find difficulties when you are finding out scientific proof that people have been having sex with their son, daughters, brothers, aunties, uncles, cousins, grandmas? There is no difficulties, surely. The Child Court of New South Wales took an unusual step by publishing its decision permanently removing the children. In the court's findings, the neglect of the children and genetic evidence were viewed as dispositive in the matter. The court held that there is no realistic possibility of restoration of the children to their biological family. A number of attempts by the elder family members, though, to establish connections with the younger have been blocked by the courts. While in care, the children started by often displaying sexual behaviour, whether between themselves or with caretakers, although these habits have faded over time. Australian police attempted to deport Betty to New Zealand, her country of birth, after the completion of her sentence, but Betty fought the decision. She was released from the deportation centre in November 2015 and is now residing in South Australia with her daughter Raylene and at least two other male relatives. She has also tried to contact family members through Facebook and other social media platforms. Now, it all seems to be really focused on Betty, but really, these poor children have gone through a hell of a lot, which I can't even begin to explain. I can't even put it into words of what these kids would have been through, because I think it's going to be damn disrespectful for me to even try. So let's focus a bit on what these kids reportedly went through. The cult children had visible physical and cognitive ailments, including malnourishment, unintelligible speech, dysphoric features, and hearing and sight problems. Medical examination revealed further issues, such as fungal infections of the feet and mouth, excessive dental decay, and congenital health issues, such as chronic renal failure, acute glaucoma, pneumonia, and heart problems. The children did not attend school regularly. Betty claims that they were homeschooled. One 15-year-old boy had the cognitive level of a 5-year-old. Many of the children could not read or write, and those who could were functioning well below their age level. The children also suffered basic knowledge of hygiene, such as bathing, brushing their teeth, using the toilet. One girl had never seen toilet paper. And one boy did not understand the concept of showering. In addition to the development and the cognitive delays, the children showed evidence of physical trauma. One child, 12-year-old Carl, threatened to stab caseworkers with a pencil and cut their throats. Two of the older children wet the bed. Authorities torture the children, a disturbing picture of the family began to emerge. Authorities already knew this was no regular family. But what the children revealed paled in the comparison of the living conditions in which they were found. The cult's lifestyle was one of rampant sexual abuse, with family members engaging in acts with just about every other member of the family. Just understanding relationships was challenging, as someone's uncle could also be their father. For instance, 7-year-old Nadine told authorities that her father was her maternal uncle, Charlie Colt. Kimberly, age 13, told a psychologist that she had the same father as her mother and grandmother. Cindy, age 5, tried repeatedly to kiss male caregivers on the lips. Brian placed his hand on his sister's knee and moved up her thigh, and Carmel tried to force a boy to have sex with her. The children talk openly about sexual relations they had on the farm, both with adults and other children. These activities were encouraged by the adults. The boys also revealed that they had tortured and mutilated animals. Tammy, the daughter of Betty, disclosed to authorities that she had been sexually abused since the age of 12 by multiple family members. She described how she would hide from her brothers in an attempt to avoid assault. Betty encouraged the abuse and forbid the girls from seeking medical treatment when pregnant. Tammy also revealed that she had been in a relationship with her brother for the past 3 years. You try and think now what actually goes through these kids' head on a daily basis. It's just absolutely unimaginable pain that must just pierce their minds every minute of the day. Now, there is testing results which you can see online, and I'm going to share with you these results. Betty Colt genetic testing revealed that all of her children were fathered by family members. Her 15-year-old son, Bobby, was fathered either by her own father, Tim, or by her brother. The other four that were tested were fathered by close family members, but they are also unknown of which one. Raylene Colt, her testing of Raylene's daughter, Kimberly, revealed that her parents to be either half-siblings, which is an uncle and niece, auntie-nephew, double first cousins, grandparent, grandchild, or first cousins. Martha Colt, she had 4 children, fathered by either her own father, Tim, or her brother. One child is a result of a relationship with another close family member. Rhonda Colt's daughter, Cindy, was the only child not fathered by a relative. The court's records indicate that, unlike the other children, Cindy presented as a well-spoken, polite, bright, intelligent girl whose development was normal for her age. Tammy is the adult daughter of Betty. She revealed that all her children were fathered by her brother Derek. Genetic testing confirms this. One daughter died, aged 2 months, of Zellweger syndrome, a genetic disorder. Tammy and her children did not live on the farm, but the authorities later removed her children from her home. So, to just clarify of what actually happened to these people, we can probably say absolutely sweet fuck all. They got off with really light, prison sentences, if actually any of them did any time in prison. And despite the discovery and the shutdown of their inbred child abuse, it looks like the cult family ties are still intact and will remain so for the foreseeable future. With the government letting the cults off easy, the children now grown to the age of consent, their real names changed to protect the family and any real information about them, seemingly scrubbed away from the internet. It looks like the so-called cult family is now free to live their lives, with no repercussions, however they wish. And on that bombshell, people, that is it for this episode. I thank you, the listener, for joining me for these beautiful podcasts. Now, I'm going to go away, have a lie down, and hopefully sleep, and not get too wound up and angry about this case. No, that's going to happen. Anyway, take it easy, my people, and I will see you next time under the stairs.